Hello, I'm Steve Caldwell, and welcome to the Manager Mojo podcast, where we use our mojo to create inspired leaders who are transforming people and the world around them. Now, let's get started by recognizing someone who's doing something good. Today I want to recognize a service that I've used for quite a few years now that really makes my life easier. It's called Send Out Cards. Now, I'll bet that you're like me. You like to send people birthday cards and congratulations cards and anniversary and those types of things. I love doing that. It's one of those things that people really appreciate you thinking about them. And I just live such a busy life that it's really difficult sometimes for me to do it. So several years ago, I started using a service called Send Out Cards, which allows me to upload my list of people that I want to send stuff to, or I can just add somebody on the fly and send them a really nice card along with a gift. And I'd highly recommend it. You can find out more about Send Out Cards by going to the resources tab on managermojo.com, and if you'll look for the link, it says Send Out Cards under my top recommendations. You can find out more about it. So thanks, Send Out Cards, for really making my life easier. Hello and welcome everyone to the Manager Mojo podcast. Steve Caldwell here, and I'm really glad and excited to introduce our guest today. Our guest is Erminia Ibarra, and Erminia is the Cora Chaired Professor of Leadership and Learning and Professor of Organizational Behavior at INSEAD. She's the author of Working Identity, Unconventional Strategies for Reinventing Your Career. Now, prior to joining INSEAD, she served on the Harvard Business School faculty for 13 years. She ranks number 9 among the Thinkers 50 list of the most influential business gurus in the world, and is on HR Magazine's list of the top 20 most influential international thinkers. Congratulations on all of that, Erminia.
Thank you, Steve.
Now, I want to mention also to our listeners that you speak regularly at global business events such as World Economic Forum Davos meetings, Global Drucker Forum, and many others. She's not only a book author, she's appeared on CNBC, she's written numerous articles for Harvard Business Review, Wall Street Journal, Financial Times, and New York Times. She's a proud graduate of Yale University and is a National Science Fellow. So I know you grew up in Miami, but I am talking to you now from Paris, is that correct?
That's right. Well, I'm actually in Fontainebleau. I live in Paris, but INSEAD is an hour away to the south in the forest of Fontainebleau where Napoleon built his castle. And so I am right now speaking to you from the forest of Fontainebleau.
Oh, awesome. Well, that's a first for me. And so I am really happy to have you here today. And why don't you share with our listeners a little bit of the fun things that you've got going on, and then we're going to talk about your new book that's going to be released very shortly.
The fun things I've got going on, well, you know, Steve, I am absolutely taken up with communicating with people about my new book, which is about to come out. So that's a fun thing. I don't know if it qualifies on your scale, although I have plans in 2 weeks' time to go skiing with my son. Here in France, everybody goes skiing on exactly the same week, pretty much to exactly the same region.
Well, I'll be.
We're very much looking forward to that. It looks like the snow's going to be good, so that's a kind of a fun thing that's going on.
Well, that is awesome. That does sound like fun.
Yep.
Well, let's start today with our discussion to share with our listeners that you have a brand new book going to come out just very shortly, and the title of it is "Act Like a Leader, think like a leader. Now, I'm excited to talk with you about this because you have an interesting perspective on leadership. Would you share what your perspective of leadership is and what caused you to write this particular book?
Okay, so let's see. Maybe we can start with what caused me to write this particular book and then lead into my perspective on leadership.
Awesome.
I've been teaching both MBA students and executives for about 25 years now. And one of the things I've always been interested in is how we change and evolve in our careers, which we do, whether we like it or not. And one of the things that's both exciting and hard is when we get to kind of a juncture in our careers, it's the famous kind of what got you here won't get you there, where you know it's time to make a change and move into a new direction, but you're kind of stuck in the past and don't know how and don't even know if you really want to. And so I've been observing this for years, and I've looked at it in terms of people making really big career changes. That was the first book that you mentioned about. But here at a business school, I ended up spending more and more time with people who didn't really necessarily want to change careers, but were kind of, shall we say, at times torn about whether they wanted to move into bigger leadership roles. Mm-hmm. They were oftentimes really good and happy doing what they were doing, playing pretty expert roles, kind of functional experts, really good at getting things done, at executing, maybe turning things around, getting things done, and ambitious, thinking about whether they might want to move up to a higher level or even just have a bigger impact without necessarily getting promoted. But feeling ambivalent about it, thinking that often that comes with having to play politics, having to do a lot of the stuff that seems like a lot of talk, you know, developing a vision and getting people bought in and having to change a bit their leadership style. And so I started, I created a program for these people and started following and seeing what their experience was and how they tackled it. And basically what I learned is that you have to figure it out as you go along. You can't sit in a room and self-analyze and say, who do I want to be as a leader and what do I really want to do and what's my purpose and what are my, you know, what's my ideal self? You really can't figure it out, and anything that you write down on a piece of paper isn't going to happen anyhow.
Mm-hmm.
So you're much better off playing around the edges and experimenting and signing up for a project or getting involved in a professional association or anything that kind of expands your mind about what's happening in your world, in your business, in your industry. Anything that expands your network of people that you're talking to so you're not always limited by the views of the usual suspects.
Mm-hmm.
And when you start to do those things, you just grow naturally as a leader because you have a bigger perspective and you start seeing how the dots connect. And then those things actually motivate you to do something because you know you can, because you see things more clearly. And then it's no longer a kind of a chore and a fear, but it is actually who you become and what you want to do. And so that's my perspective on leadership. It's not something you're born with. It's not something you can introspect and find in your gut or deep down inside. It's something that you discover by doing.
Yeah, you know, I'm so glad you said that, and I didn't even prompt you for that because my Manager Mojo listeners understand that my passion in leadership and management is changing this perspective that people believe that you had to be born to be a leader. Nothing could be further from the truth. Everybody can learn how to be a leader. So thank you for saying that. Now, I know in the book that you address that so many people do this introspective type of thinking that really keeps them locked into where they are. But you developed an insight that you called outsight, and it's a different perspective. Would you define what outsight is for our listeners so that they could kind of understand where you're headed?
Yeah. Just to put it at its simplest, outsight is the opposite of insight. It's what you learn not from introspection, but by going out in the world and getting a bigger external perspective on your job, on yourself, from a broader set of people. It is really the external perspective that you develop when you venture out outside your daily grind.
Yeah, so don't just do the normal. Get outside of that. Go talk to other people. Learn, and by learning, you're actually doing, aren't you?
Yeah.
Now, I'd like for one thing that occurred to me as I was thinking about our discussion today. I know when people start saying, all right, get outside of what you're doing and you're going to begin to learn and you begin to act like a leader. In the U.S. at least, there's this saying that fake it till you make it. But I think that you're talking about something a little bit deeper than that, are you not? And if you could kind of contrast that statement.
A lot of people don't like the fake it till you make it approach because it feels somehow that they're lying, that they're dishonest, that they're an imposter. And to a certain extent, that is true. But what I have seen is that in a lot of situations, it's really a case of fake it till you learn it. Mm. What you're trying to do is figure out how to step up to a new situation that, where you don't know what to do, you've not been in it before. All you have usually going for you, if you're lucky, are some role models, other people who have gone before you, who've done it successfully, who might provide some clues as to how to take up that new role. But the problem inevitably is that what they do to be successful feels very alien to you. And it feels alien because you don't feel confident, because you don't think you can do it. But the last thing you need to do in that contest is express the full extent of your insecurities, and that's why we fake it until we learn it. Now, what I've seen is that some people are really very averse to that because they are as people. And in those cases, you really do struggle because thing in your past experience that is going to help you figure out how to evolve. What it's calling for is something that is natural, a scope of who you are and what you know. And it takes a lot of courage to actually try something that is unnatural, that isn't you. But if you take it as a learning method, as a way, I call it being playful with yourself, as opposed to having a rigid and serious sense of who you are, you will eventually figure out a way of being that is both effective in this new situation and is authentically you, but it's an outcome of a process. It's not an input. It's not the starting point.
Mm-hmm. That's an interesting perspective. Now, I love this idea about being playful with yourself. Most people today don't do that. They're very, very hard on themselves and very serious, and then they wonder why they can't connect with other people. So
right.
How can we be more playful?
Yeah, well, I think we have this whole culture of self-improvement that is really, you know, drudgery and a bunch of hard work. I mean, how many self-help books, how many checklists, how many, applications to help us be better? You know, sometimes we just need to have just a little bit more slack and a little bit more of a sense. You know what? I don't know where I'm going. I don't know who I want to be in 5 years' time. I might have very contradictory ideas about wellness. I might have ambitions that don't necessarily fit together. And so what? That's just going to be the case until I figure it out. And in the interim, why can't I just play along with these possibilities as I learn more about them, not having to be fully committed to being this kind of person or that kind of person, but committed to experimenting as a way of exploring and figuring out oneself.
Yeah, I love that. I love that ability to just experiment and to try. And, you know, by experiencing, you grow and you do become a better leader. Ermini, I have to share with you here, back early in my career, I was determined I was going to be the most productive human being that ever lived. And so... I absolutely disciplined myself to become, I mean, I used every time-saving technique I could get. I really almost had turned myself into a robot. So I can tell you from personal experience, it doesn't work. The robot eventually breaks down, and you have to relate to real human beings.
Yeah. Yeah, and you also need slack, I found. You know, you need unproductive time, wasted time, daydreaming time, you know, because that's the equivalent of, you know, the light bulb going on when you go in the shower. That's when you start to get a little bit of insight. That's when the dots start to connect. And when we become these efficiency machines, it actually takes all creativity out of the process.
That's a great way of saying that. Well, I know a lot of our listeners are, they're really working to become a better leader. So could you maybe give them a tip or two about how they could develop outsight so that they could become a better leader?
One thing I suggest to people immediately is think about how you could be a little more creative with your day job. You know, don't just define. Think about how you could work around the edges to put in some stuff that's a little bit more fun, adding in a project that maybe takes you outside your group, or starting to get involved in a professional association, or organizing a panel or a conference, stuff that will be kind of novel and fun and exciting, and also has the added advantage of connecting you to new people. Because ultimately what you want is to be expanding your network in a natural way, but in a way that just broadens your horizon. You know, the best kind of network is the kind of network that brings you information and ideas that you weren't even looking for. If you get that, then you just evolving and developing becomes a very natural thing. When we stop growing, when we stay stifled inside the same group of the usual suspects, the same people we've been talking to for the last 20 years, and they, you know, we can almost complete each other's sentences and read each other's thoughts. And when that's happening, you know, you're in trouble. You need to get out of the house a little bit more.
So absolutely correct. Well, and maybe even go skiing in France, right?
Yep.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Absolutely.
Well, you know, I'm the father of two adult daughters that are in business, and I'd like your perspective on any, are there particularly particular challenges that women face when they're trying to so-called act like a leader? Could you give us your perspective?
Oh, yes, Steve. You know, I could talk for an hour on that one. You know, it depends a lot on what kind of organization and industry they work in. But most of the ones that I study and I work in are pretty male-dominated. And what happens is when they're pretty male-dominated, what I have found is that it really interferes with the whole process of becoming a leader as developing a new identity. Because what I just described is really a process of learning by experimenting, by observing other people, adopting styles and ways of operating that work for them, adapting them to yourself. And what happens oftentimes for women in organizations where there are few women role models is that process gets a little bit tricky, because you look up and you see who's really effective and who are the rock stars here and what do they do, and inevitably you see people whose style either would never work for you if you did it,
right?
or totally unappealing. You don't want to act that way if you think they're fantastic performers. And so when you have that kind of situation, you are more likely to be less a chameleon and more true to self, and more likely to hang on to this idea of authenticity, because the context in which you operate is already telling you you might not be able to be yourself. And so when you go that way, what happens a lot of times with women in business, when you go that way, is you can stay a little bit stuck in the past for a longer period of time you know, in the expert role, in the analytic role, in the substance rather than the form, because the role models are not as helpful to you. And also because one of the things we know from a bunch of research, including my own, is that it's harder for women to get sponsors who kind of push them through for the next big assignment or the next, you know, hot, visible project. And those are the ways in which I've just described we learn and grow as leaders.
Mm-hmm.
So when you have that combination of having a hard time getting that sponsorship that gets you through the door, you know, women, by the way, get lots of mentoring, too much advice, death by advice.
Right.
But they really need people who actually just place them in the hot jobs. But when you've got that situation coupled with the fact that you have fewer role models from whom to learn how to look and walk and talk like a leader, it gets harder to learn that stuff, and the learning curve can be just a little bit slower because you're doing it on your own. You're trying to do it your way. And then when that happens, people say, oh, gee, well, she's not stepping up to leadership. She's too much about the details and not, you know, being visionary or not being aggressive or, you know, bold in her ideas. And it's really all a dance between what you want to put out there, what you want to accomplish, but what the social context is telling you back in terms of support, in terms of networking, in terms of advocacy for the jobs that you really want to do next. And so, yeah, there's a lot to be said on this topic.
Right. Well, I'm enjoying listening to it because my perspective is that both men need to hear this because in so many cases there are male-dominated leadership teams and they struggle with trying to find women that are ready to move into that leadership role. And I always tell them it's because you're not looking. You're not actually helping. And they don't know what that means. So if you would have a little bit of advice to those male leaders that are listening today, what are some things that they could do to begin really help change this perspective? Because we need the brilliance of women in business just as much as we need the brilliance of men. So how do we do that?
I can't agree with you more. So, you know, the first thing I would say is, you know, don't try to tackle this as an abstract problem, guys. Pick a couple women and get to know them.
Go figure, huh?
Yeah, just get to know them. And I've seen this happen a lot in organizations. You got senior teams thinking, oh, my God, what am I going to do about diversity and what program do I put in and what do we do? But the younger women coming up are a mystery to them. So just get to know them and keep in mind that everybody connects easier to people who are like them. We're, you know, that's just how we're built as human beings.
Right.
So the minute you have to connect to people through, you know, across different lines, say, you know, different age, different gender, maybe different nationality, different business unit, it's going to be a little bit harder. You're going to have to put in a bit of work. But you're the senior person, so you put in the work. You know, figure it out. It's not a one shot. You don't get to know somebody in 2 seconds. It's easier to feel like you know somebody in 2 seconds if they're just like you and you can talk about football or whatever else you have in common. When you're bridging a few dimensions of difference, sometimes it takes a little longer, but you give it time and you actually have more in common. And the thing is it's also normal human nature not to take a risk on the unknown. And a lot of times what happens is that people are instead of an unknown quantity. People don't really know them as human beings. It takes an effort to do that. So just start, you know, picking out a couple women in your organization who you've heard are really talented or who you suspect are really talented and do whatever you can to get to know them.
I think that's great advice to at least start there and create that relationship. And oftentimes, it can just start with asking a few good questions to get to know that you really don't have to be just like somebody else to really respect them, isn't it?
Yeah, no, agreed with that.
So just ask
questions.
Yeah,
obviously that's the first step. Yeah, ask questions And, you know, ask questions too. Whenever there is a job opening that comes up and the only candidates that come up are men, ask questions. Why is that? Are there no women? Can't we look around for some? How do we expand the pool? How do we get more creative here? How do we get a few of them to apply? Why are they not applying? You know, those are important questions to ask, because if you don't, the natural network and the drive of the numbers are going to get you over and over again a slate of men. You there?
Yep, I'm here. Go ahead.
Okay.
You had said it's going to get you a slate of men, and it went silent. So go ahead.
Yeah, no, that was just that was the end. If you don't go out of your way, you're only going to get male applicants and male slates.
Gotcha. Well,
if you want diversity, go look for it.
Yeah, you can't wait for diversity to just jump up and hit you in the head. You have to actually be proactive and go do some things, don't you?
Yeah.
Let's go back for just a minute, because I really want to talk about this concept that you have of a playful mind. I love that concept, but I think it's so foreign to most of us because we take our jobs so dead seriously. And so what are some tips that we could have to maybe create this playful attitude in our mind and to create this space for ourselves?
Well, what I was talking about was also being, not just being playful about your job, but also being playful about your self-concept. Mm. Being playful about your job, we discussed a little bit. I think that involves creating space to tweak the job in your image and not just take it as it's defined, but work into it activities that are fun and interesting for you. I'll give you an example. I knew once a banker who was in charge of, who headed up the kind of the technology practice for a bank, the client relationships in the technology sector, and she loved to go to the theater, but she didn't ever have time to go to the theater. And so at one point she just thought, well, let me just pick four plays I want to see every year, get my assistant to buy a block of seats, and invite my clients. And so she started doing this thing where she'd have a dinner that was a very fast buffet dinner right by the theater district. And she'd invite her clients and they'd go to the theater afterwards. And this thing grew into this kind of huge networking event that everybody wanted to go to. This was in Boston when I lived in Boston. And she had fun. She got a lot of business done. She helped a lot of other people do business, kind of raised her profile in the community, and all the while doing something that she wanted to do but never had time for. That's a playful approach to your job.
I love that.
Not being a victim. Gosh, I have no time. It's really saying, what do I want to do and how do I work it in?
That's a wonderful example, and one that I think all of us could relate to and begin to take actions on ourselves.
Yep.
So, yep. Would you mind, what would you, I know I want our listeners to pick up a copy of Act Like a Leader, Think Like a Leader, but what are maybe three or four tips that you could give us so that we could begin to move forward today? What would be those top three or four things that you'd like for us to consider and take action on?
Okay, so the first one is look inside your organization and see if there is a group project that kind of cuts across, that gets you outside your usual domain,
mm-hmm.
And interacting with other people in the company that you can sign up for. And if it doesn't exist, maybe make it up, because you could probably come up with something that needs doing.
Awesome.
A second one is, what are you interested in more generally? Is it an industry? Is it an area of functional expertise, say like marketing? Is it something that has to do with digital and technology? There's going to be an association for it. There's going to be a conference. There's going to be something that brings together kindred spirits who are very interested in this topic and who are an expert in it. Go join it. Mm-hmm. Go join it. And that's step number one. Step number two, once you're joined, start signing up to speak at it, to organize a panel, to do something that actually gets you in front of people and makes you play an active role. A third one, think about three people that you've lost track of who are doing interesting things or who you used to know and like in a business capacity. Call them up. Have lunch if they're local. If they're not local, do a Skype. Catch up. Find out what they're up to. Or pick three people in your company that are not in your group that you always wanted to get to know. Find a way to have a coffee with them. But start connecting. My fourth one. Try to identify two or three leaders who you think are really strong, who you admire, who you respect. Ideally, flesh and blood people, not historical figures. Because it doesn't always apply. And see what you can do to kind of follow them around and see what they do. See what you can pick up, what you can imitate. You know, they don't, sometimes you can you can cover it by using, I don't know, if it's not people that you know, by using YouTube or something else. You know, personally, myself, I'm always interested in what makes a person a great speaker. So, for example, I'll watch with an eye towards how is it that people open up, how do they grab the audience, how do they close in a memorable way, and all kinds of things. You could look at somebody who's fantastic in a meeting, who's fantastic at using soft power, meaning they don't seem particularly pushy, but they get exactly what they want.
That's awesome.
Watch what they do. Watch what they do and try to figure out if there's not some of it that you could force yourself to do and see how it works.
That is awesome. Well, Erminia, thank you so much. Those are action items that I think all of us can take. It's been a delight and pleasure to talk with you and hear your perspective today.
Well, thank you. I've enjoyed talking with you. You said I should take a playful approach. I tried my best to do it.
And you have, and it's like you lived it, and I love that. So I want to encourage our listeners, be on the lookout. I want you to go get a copy of Act Like a Leader, Think Like a Leader, and really discover more deeply some of the topics that Erminia and I only just briefly touched on today. I wish you the absolute most success in the world on your new book, and thank you so much for sharing your wisdom with us today, Erminia.
Thank you so much. Thanks for taking the time to chat with me. I enjoyed it a lot, Steve.
Awesome. Thank you.
Take care.
Thanks for being a part of the Manager Mojo audience. I really appreciate it, and I'd love to hear from you. Please let me know your suggestions by emailing me at steve@managermojo.com.